The Cultural and Outdoor Resources Finance Division Committee meeting will come to order Monday, February 9th. Mm-hmm. It's St. Louis County, Hermantown, and Duluth days over at the Armory from 5 to 8. So I do not anticipate that this meeting will be lasting till 8. But 6:30, they're about good time, I think. Tonight's meeting will start with a presentation and discussion of the governor's budget recommendations, which we have before us, and we have guests from the Office of Budget Management here to explain how our committee accounts and the constitutional amendment monies are being proposed to use. But before we start that, I want to call your attention to a book called The Price of Government, and it's getting the results we need in an age of permanent fiscal crisis. And it's by David Osborne and Peter Hutchinson, and it's published by Basic Books, 2004. And from that is the chapter, Setting the Priorities of Government, which is buying results that citizens value at a price they are willing to pay. Chapter 3 of the book, that is your homework assignment for the next 2 weeks. Representative Eakin, the minutes are before us for the February 4th meeting.
Madam Chair, I would like to move the minutes for the previous meeting.
Eakin moves the minutes as printed. Are there any additions or corrections? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are adopted. Mr. Rolla, Ms. Reed, welcome to the committee, and proceed in the manner that you practice.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, for the opportunity to come and talk to your committee about the governor's recommendation as it relates to your committee. I will tell you that it was a bit of a challenge for us because of your committee's unique jurisdiction. I think you touched the accounts and agencies of 8 or 9 of our executive budget officers. And so we tried to consolidate a little bit here and bring the budget officers to describe the situation for most of the agencies, and then we'll try to, like I said, consolidate the rest of those. For the record, my name is Mike Roloff. I'm an executive budget coordinator at MMB, one of the team leaders, so you'll also hear that. And we will try to proceed through. I'd like to suggest a possible way of doing this. We thought it might be good to kind of go through the agencies first and kind of talk about the governor's recommendations that aren't specifically related to the constitutional amendment. And then what we could do is go through the governor's recommendations that are specifically related to the constitutional amendment, and then we can do additional questions about constitutional amendment and some of the issues involved with that. If that works for you, that's fine. If you would like to ask questions while we're testifying, that's fine also. And I'll let the budget officers introduce themselves. We also know that we have a number of agencies represented here who can probably provide additional detail about the recommendations and the impacts of the recommendations, and to the extent we can we always think it's better to get that kind of detailed information from the agency as they come before you.
Excuse me, sure. Ms. Rollup. What's a budget officer?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I've never been asked that question in front of a commission before. The budget officers at MMB are a number of people who kind of focus in on one policy area and a number of agencies within that policy area, and they then become, make themselves as expert as they can in the issues and what the agencies are facing, helping the agencies put together budget recommendations, coordinating that through the governor's budget processes, whether that be operating or capital, and also helping draft legislation and implement it into the accounting system once legislation is passed so that the money can be spent as the legislature recommends.
And would an individual representative, if they had further questions about something in the budget book, would it be appropriate for them to contact the budget officer?
They could certainly contact, Madam Chair, they could certainly contact the budget officer, or they could contact the agency directly. Either one of those. Or work, right, or work through the fiscal staff usually to get in contact with the
fiscal staff. Our fiscal staff.
Right, correct.
Okay, thank you.
We'll start with kind of an overview of the governor's budget recommendation. And I'm sure you've heard enough about the recommendations and some of the terrible choices that the governor got to think about, ponder, the same ones that you're getting to think about, with the tremendous deficits that we've got, and it left with a number of choices that weren't very good in terms of agency-based budgets, especially those agencies funded by the general fund. What you will see as we talk about a little bit is that the governor did try to make the different cuts within the agency reflect his priorities. He didn't cut everybody the same amount. There are people you'll see under your jurisdiction who've got same level funding. You'll see people who took some pretty significant cuts. He has stated publicly that, you know, these reflect his priorities, and he assumes that the legislature, as they continue discussions of these, may come to different priorities and fully expect that. So with that, I think I will turn it over to, we practiced in alphabetical order. I don't know how your books are organized, but if that's okay with you, that's what we'll start with. And with that, I'll turn it over to Ms. Reed.
Ms. Reed, welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Abigail Reed, and as Mike said, I'm a budget officer at MMB. And the budget officers didn't want to come to the committee not having done our homework, so I did bring pictures of me in natural settings in Minnesota. So I do have one hiking at Lucerne and another one riding the chairlift up to the Alpine Slide at Lucerne, too. So we just wanted to make sure we had done our work.
Very, very good.
So there you go. And my picture's not as good as Ryan's. So.
We'll see. We'll make that judgment.
I guess you can make the call. Madam Chair, members, the first agency I have is Amateur Sports Commission. The Amateur Sports Commission has three core functions that they perform. And the first one is hosting amateur sports tourism events. So these are things like the 2007 World Skating Championships and the 2008 U.S. Figure Skating Championships. So they bid on and bring those sorts of events to the state, working with local governments and other entities. The second is the operating the annual Star of the North Games. This is a rotating sort of Olympics of Minnesota that moves to different locations throughout the state each year. And the third is overseeing and supporting the National Sports Center in Blaine. It's the most visited sports facility in Minnesota, has about 4 million annual visitors. And so their budget comes entirely from the general fund at this point, although the agency is working on, and I know has spoken with you about some other options they're working on for other sources of funding. But for now, it does come from the general fund. And over the last three biennia, the Amateur Sports Commission has maintained a budget of approximately $300,000 per year, so about $600,000 per biennium. And in recent years, though, a significant portion of that appropriation has actually been granted as one-time money. So when it was written into the bills, it was one-time in nature. So what happened this year is their forecast base is actually $220,000 per year. So what the governor's budget does is recommend restoring $50,000 per year to their base budget. That would bring them from the $220,000 to $270,000 per year. So that would actually represent a 23% increase over their forecast base, but it would actually be an 11% decrease from where they are. So it kind of puts them back up part of the way to where they would have been had the money continued and not been one time in nature. And the second item under Amateur Sports Commission is the governor's recommendation to repeal a $750,000 appropriation per year that is actually supporting debt service the city of Minneapolis pays on the Target Center. This was a recommendation also made last year. And the original agreement that this appropriation grew out of was struck during the mid-1990s public takeover of the Target Center. And the original agreement was actually structured to end after 15 years. So the appropriation was written into law without a expiration date. So this recommendation is to repeal that appropriation in law now that the expectation for the state's participation has ended. And this grant is actually entirely pass-through money. So while you see it under Amateur Sports Commission in the budget book, that's just because they've been the one handling the grant. But it wouldn't affect their operations in any way. Are there any questions on amateur sports before?
Representative Lapa.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just remember this issue has come up in past years as well, and I'm not quite sure if the history here is what is the history that others would represent it. And so I think there'll be some alternative views shared at some point on what the expectations were. That's all I just want to say.
Thank you.
History. And if there aren't any more questions on amateur sports, Madam Chair,
Madam Chair, members, for the record, my name is Ryan Baumtrot. I am a budget officer with MMB, and a couple of the agencies fall under my jurisdiction. That's why I'm here today. To fulfill the assignment, I brought in a picture I am quite proud of. Last year, up at my cabin that my parents own, I caught a nice 5-pound bass fishing on the river. So I do think I should be very proud of this.
Represent Hoss, did you see that?
Can't sleep on it.
I suppose. Very good.
Thank
very
you.
Good.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the honor for being here. I'd like to first talk about the Arts Board. The Arts Board core functions are awarding grants, serving as a fiscal agent for state funds that are distributed to the regional art councils, and then creating partnerships related to art projects. Over 90% of the Arts Board budget comes from their general fund appropriation. Another source of funding for the Arts Board is a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts of nearly $1.5 million for the biennium. In the 08-09 biennium, the large majority of the expenditures were in the area of local assistance. And this category includes their grant programs and the money they distribute to the regional art councils. And that's typically over 90% of their total expenditures is on this category of local assistance. The governor's recommendation for the Arts Board is to transition it to a private nonprofit. And with this transition, the governor recommends the board's general fund appropriation be reduced by one-third in fiscal year 10, with the remaining two-thirds being reduced in fiscal year 11. In fiscal year 10, the board will receive a general fund appropriation of $6,892,000, while in fiscal year 11, the board will receive an appropriation from the general fund of $3,446,000. With the governor's recommendation in fiscal year 12 and thereafter, the Arts Board would not receive a direct appropriation from the general fund.
And Can you give a reasoning for that suggested transfer?
Madam Chair, as Mike Roloff kind of alluded to earlier, the governor was faced with some very hard decisions given the economic situation and the budget deficit, and what he came forward here relating to the Arts Board and other agencies were based on his priorities and what he believed were the core functions of government.
Okay, maybe I have to reword the question. Ms. Bomtok, what is the advantage of going to a 501c3, what is that, and what is the advantage of that for an organization?
Madam Chairman, I'll take Mr. Bromchog off the hook to the best.
Thank you.
I don't necessarily think that there was a lot of discussion that there would be significant advantages of the 501c3. I think it was more so that the governor was reflecting core priorities there, and that the 501c3 might be an option. They would still have the ability to go out and raise money and offer grants and continue to work that way. But just a reflection that that might be an option for them as their general fund spending with their general fund appropriation was phased out under his recommendation.
And Mr. Roloff, you don't think that that doesn't create a disadvantage either for receiving federal funds?
Madam Chairman, I would assume to the extent that federal funds need match, it would probably make their life more difficult. But
and so it might reduce the amount of money that comes in from the federal government?
That is possible.
Thank you. Representative Lawford.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the representatives of the administration, I'm wondering whether or not you had reality tested that at all with the foundation or giving community, because it seems like it would put the Arts Commission in direct competition with their partners, arts organizations throughout the entire state of Minnesota, and I'm not sure what the receptivity would be of both the arts community or the foundation community to be funding those in competition with each other.
Madam Chair and Representative Loeffler, you raise good points, and the only answer I can give you is no, we did not have any discussions with their stakeholders or with the Arts Board themselves in formulating this recommendation.
Representative Kahn.
Madam Chairman, I remember some time ago, and I'm sorry since I came late if someone's already asked this, but the governor completely eliminated the funding for the Minnesota Humanities Commission, and then the effect of that had to be immediately reversed the next year, because it turned out that if you didn't have a state-funded Humanities Commission, you were not eligible for any federal funding from the National Humanities Commission. And I wondered if anything like this goes on from the National Endowment for the Arts, which I think supplies a big chunk of money to the state arts board. Does that change if we don't have a statutory state-funded state arts board?
Madam Chair and Representative, we aren't aware of what the requirements are there.
Okay. Madam Chair, I guess when they eliminated the humanities appropriations of the Humanities Commission and eliminated the statutory reference to it, I'm sure they weren't aware of that either. So I just wonder.
Representative Houser.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just trying to look at potential unintended consequences. And if they administer grants, I mean, is the assumption they would no longer do that because they're now a private nonprofit? Is that what we're calling them? Does their oversight function, the decision making function relative to the grant programs change? And then, second, as I was looking at all of the areas that we're going to talk about today, this one particularly, I think we always get the measurable outcome. The whole economic impact of all of the arts organizations and the contributions of the state. And as we're cutting, do we make the forecaster's job worse in the future with some of these cuts, that we're taking away the impetus for a fairly thriving part of our economy, so we make future forecasts worse? Girola.
On the Madam Chair, Representative Hausman, on the second part of the question first, it is correct that I do know that when the Arts Board does their budget presentation, they quite often talk about the economic multipliers in it and all of that. I don't think there is any specific adjustment to a forecast based on the Arts Board cut or increase in funding, certainly not beyond the general dynamics of overall layoffs within state government and all of those other kinds of things that would also affect the forecast going into the future. Again, it's from a selection of a number of very tough choices, this was a tough choice that the governor made. And if you don't mind, would you repeat the first part of the question?
The first one was, what happens to their role? I mean, they really are a grants organization. They make decisions, but now they are no longer a state-funded organization. They're a private nonprofit, and do we lose a little touch with that whole process?
Madam Chair and Representative Hausman, again, I don't know if I can speak for the Arts Board, but I think I would presume that as part of the phase-out, they would probably finish their work with the outstanding grants that they had state grants, and then as they move into more of that nonprofit role, they would evolve another role with monitoring any grants that they made in their role as that nonprofit. But we have not talked about specifics like that. It'd certainly be something worth talking to the Arts Board about.
And that's something that we will go into more detail with them. But just to follow up on that then, and with your answer that you presented to us, what happens to the Regional Arts Council then and their role with the Arts Board? Did you discuss that when you were making your recommendations?
Madam Chair, we discussed it from the standpoint of like their other grantees. We understand that, I mean, one way to look at this would be over a three-year period, they could just cease to function, and that would have similar effects on the Regional Arts Council. Or the other one is to try to make some kind of a transition to another kind of organization that would have a new relationship with those Regional Arts Councils and so forth, but wouldn't presuppose what that might look like in the future.
Mr. Bompas.
Madam Chair, Representative, if I can just follow up, the governor's recommendation doesn't eliminate the statute that guides the Arts Board, so in terms of administering grants, it still would be able to administer grants. It's just that the general fund money going towards them would decrease, so the amount of grants that they could put forth would be affected.
So the new money you're still going to award to the Arts Council? Or to the board?
Madam Chair, that's not part of the governor's recommendation.
Madam Chair, if they were to get some additional sources of funding or government funding, and I'm assuming you're relating, you're talking about the constitutional amendment, then certainly that would be a discussion to be made, or I would assume that they would want some kind of administrative oversight and accountability and all those same types of things.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the best of my knowledge, one of the challenges we're facing is the language in the constitutional amendment that makes certain that we are supplementing and not supplanting. How does that language square with essentially an elimination of the Arts Board and the possibility or likelihood that we would then fund the Arts Board? Wouldn't we necessarily be then supplanting, if we were to follow the governor's recommendations and using constitutional amendment money to fund the Arts Board?
Madam Chair,
roll up.
Senator Morgan, the supplantation issue is a very broad and very difficult issue. I was kind of hoping we could wait till the end, but if you would like to talk about it now, we sure can.
You were hoping we'd wait till we got to the constitutional amendment money?
Constitutional amendment.
We can wait. Thank you very much. Please proceed, Mr. Baumchak, or Ms. Reed.
Madam Chair, the next set of agencies I have to talk to you about is the councils, the cultural council. That includes the Asian Pacific Americans Council, the Black Minnesotans Council, the Chicano Latino Affairs Council, and the Indian Affairs Council. So I am departing from alphabetical order with the last one there. But these are four agencies that actually provide outreach to their respective communities and then advocate in state government on their behalf. And they work to bring community issues such as access to health care and education to the attention of policymakers in state government, including the governor and the legislature. Altogether, these four agencies receive $2.34 million in general fund appropriations. That's in the current biennium. And their collective forecast base for fiscal years 2010 and 11 is $2.858 million. And these agencies receive most of their funds from the general fund. A few of them have some other small sources, but the vast majority is general fund money. And their funding mainly supports the operations of the agency, so they're not grant making or anything. They're doing their own support and advocacy work. And to help share in the budget solution, the governor does recommend that these four agencies receive a 5% reduction to their forecast base, and that would yield a total savings of $144,000 for the biennium.
Okay. Madam Chair, members, the next board I'd like to talk about for agency is Explore Minnesota Tourism. As you heard last week in their testimony, Explore Minnesota Tourism promotes travel to and within the state of Minnesota. The vast majority of the agency's budget comes from their general fund appropriations. And in FY 08 and 09, almost 90% of their expenditures were from their general fund appropriations. Tourism also collects just over $3 million in revenue a biennium to cover their promotional marketing expenditures. As you heard also last week, tourism spends roughly 8% of their budget on communication, 39% on marketing and research, 16% on industry relations and grants, and 7% on travel information centers. Also included in tourism's budget is the Minnesota Film and TV Board and its SNOW-based, or Film Jobs Production Program. The Film and TV Board receives money through tourism for its operations and for the SNOW-based program and its grants. With regards to tourism, the governor is recommending a base reduction of $2.226 million for the 2010 biennium. This amounts to a 10% reduction. Included in this reduction is a $196,000 base reduction to the Film Jobs Production Program for the biennium. Under the governor's plan, tourism would still receive a general fund appropriation of $19,976,000 for the 2010-2011 biennium.
Representative Khan.
Madam Chairman, this is the issue of the subsidy to the film board is something I'm really interested in, because that was something that I absolutely had to be convinced of. I used to, when I had that in my budget, I used to zero it out every year automatically. And one of the issues that we had was the looking at the balance chart from that. An example of what films were brought in, what films were done here. You know, obviously the Coen Brothers film, which hasn't been shown yet. And one can actually look at the amount of money that was spent, one can look at the salaries that were paid, and one can look at the taxes that were collected. And do we have, are we getting that analysis so we can look at a couple of examples and see if that's and I imagine you can have the filmmakers, since many, many states are doing this, I imagine the chance of people coming here, as I think was shown when we didn't have this project, people did not come to make films here. And we've had a couple of films with Minnesota-based, the New Ulm film, which was filmed somewhere else, and the Gran Torino, which was filmed in Indiana or somewhere.
Michigan,
sorry.
This right talks about that, right?
Oh.
In the state, yes.
Okay. So what do we have that, have people put that balance sheet together?
We didn't request in that detail at this time, but we are going to talk about it at another time.
Yes.
And Ms. Wright was here and had very short time to make some presentation.
Okay. But I think the absolute, I can't believe that amount, that information can't be put in a balance sheet of hard numbers.
I'm sure.
So, Representative Erdoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and respond a little more to Representative Kahn. I did request that a list of films that have been made here recently and somewhat of a breakdown be given to us. But we've had very little done in this state since the states around us in Canada have offered higher incentives than we do, so we really don't have a lot of new motion picture activity in the state.
Well, and Representative Chairman, then I guess if there's information from other states, that can probably be worked into it too, if that's what we need to look at.
We'll get that,
won't we?
Madam Chair, and just in general, as we go through these agencies, it would be really useful to know more of the administration's expectations on change delivery, rather than just, you know, if we're going to put more or less into an agency, I would like the agency's insight or the governor's insight, if we're just going to look at his recommendations on, you know, what are we cutting back on, what won't happen as a result of $2 million less in tourism. We heard a presentation that said it's very directly related to the economic health of many parts of Minnesota. Does that potentially impact the job situation, the economy of other parts of the state? You know, is it cutting back on regional offices? Is it cutting back on marketing in other states or in other countries? I would hope that in the discussion of what to do, even though you have to make tough decisions, that would have been part of the discussion as well.
Madam Chair and Representative Loeffler, there are a number of things in the budget book. If the agency was asked to submit a 5% reduction plan or a 10% reduction plan, where they did spend some time talking about what the impacts of those changes would be, that's one of those things that I think probably the agency is in a better position than we are to talk about. There are a couple of places, like the Art Board, where we really were not in contact with them before, and the presentation in the budget book is very generic or kind of an overview of just the governor's recommendation that this is the dollars and cents, but we assume that you'll be talking to the agencies about what that impact is.
I've been corrected. The film board person is Lucinda Winter, not Lucinda Bright. I apologize, Ms. Winter. Representative Rowley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Testifiers, just hearing these other questions and comments, I was wondering if today, as you go through your presentation, you could add the numbers of job loss as you're going through each budget. You know, if you could say what kind of job loss you figure it'll be with the, for example, with Explore Minnesota tourism and so just add the job loss numbers as you're going through your presentation. would be helpful.
Roll off.
Madam Chair and Representative Lilly, other than the presentation in the budget book, which would probably be focused on the number of state employees, how it might affect their FTT, I don't know if any of them are very specific in terms of more of a macro look at the amount of job loss. So I don't think we have that information for you. I think that would be also something that we would probably have to ask the agency for.
We have the agency before us. I'm sure they'll be prepared to tell us that information then. Certainly the council will, because that's definitely job loss. But Latino and Black Minnesotans in the Indian Affairs Council, that's pure job. Mr. Bontoc.
Madam Chair, members would like to talk about the Historical Society now. The Historical Society provides educational and cultural programs and services in Minnesota through its History Center here in St. Paul and also through its statewide network of historic sites and museums. Of its total expenditures in fiscal year 8 and 9, just over $51 million, or almost 60%, were from the general fund. The Historical Society also receives almost $34 million a biennium in earned revenue from admission fees, donations, and other sales. The Historical Society spends roughly 90% of their funds on total compensation and operating expenses for its two program areas, education and outreach, and preservation and access. In fiscal year 8 and 9, Historical Society will spend about $47 million on total compensation. The governor is recommending a $5,568,000 base reduction to the society's general fund budget for the 10 and 11 biennium. This amounts to a 15% reduction for the Historical Society. It is important to note that for this reduction, fixed costs, including debt and building service costs, were removed from the base budget before this 15% was calculated. Under the governor's plan, the Historical Society would receive a general fund appropriation of $43,400,000 from the general fund for the 2010-2011 biennium.
And do you have an explanation why this agency receives a 15% rather than a 10% or a 5%?
Madam Chairman, we really don't, other than it reflects the governor's priority. You get the next one, too.
Mr. Bontoc?
Are there any more questions regarding the Historical Society?
They're going to come before us later on.
Sure.
And so.
Lastly, I would like to talk about the Humanities Commission. The Humanities Commission provides professional development to teachers, produces educational resources, and supports humanities programs in the community by creating partnerships. The Humanities Center also serves as a full-service meeting and event center. Of the Humanities, roughly $3 million annual operating budget, 8% is from the general fund. In the last biennium, the Humanities Commission received $500,000 from the general fund. The center also receives money from the federal government, donations, program fees, and building rental fees. Regarding the governor's recommendation, the governor is recommending the reduction of the entire $500,000 for the Humanities Commission that they were due to receive in the 2010-2011 biennium.
And will we, Mr. Bontoc, did you investigate whether we'd still be able to accept federal funds then if we weren't funding the Humanities Center?
Madam Chair, I'll have to look more into that, but the governor's proposal does not get in or modify their statutes at all. So at first glance, it seems like they would still be able to receive funds. But I can get back to you with a more definitive answer on that.
So is the Humanities Center then a 501c3,
then?
Is that what you're recommending?
That's,
or is that what they are now?
Madam Chair, that's what they are now.
Okay. And we understand, we learned when they were before us that it's the Humanities Center now instead of the Humanities Committee. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair and testifiers. I know just listening to the governor on the news and stuff, he says that he's, you know, committed to education, which all of us are at the table, I'm sure. And I was just reading, you know, through here, and then the words it says, Minnesota Humanities Center improves the competency of our state teachers, increases our academic achievement of the state students. So by cutting this, how does this improve our education system in our state?
Mr. Roloff.
Madam Chair and Representative Lilly, again, I don't know if I have a really great answer for you. I do know that, as Representative Kahn mentioned before, this has been the Humanities Commission and the appropriations of the Humanities Commission has kind of been in and out of the budget many times. Sometimes it's been a pass-through grant from the Department of Education. Sometimes it's been a direct grant to the organization. One time they did take the statute out and the appropriation. What the main thing here is that the Humanities Commission, the general fund appropriation of it is a relatively small part of the budget, and they tend to exist mostly on income that they receive from their teacher in services, teacher training, all of that kind of thing. I believe that the governor thought that they would be able to function without this direct state appropriation. And if it was important relative to the other needs in education, then maybe that might be the place where the discussion would take place.
Thank you, please go on.
Madam Chair, did you want to? I noticed that the Minnesota Technology Inc. was on your list. Would you like to talk about that at all? They do not get any state government aid, and they've changed to, they are now known as Enterprise Minnesota and offer business services for their nonprofit.
Ms. Sauber? It's on our list. Mr.
Sauber? Madam Chair, I think that the reason it's on the list is that if there's any legislation that relates to them that would have a budgetary impact, it would come to this committee.
Okay.
So, but Mr. Roloff is right. They were phased out of the state budget, and I think it was in 2003-2004 time frame, and are now a private nonprofit. But I think that's why it's there.
All right. Is there something that we should know about that, Mr. Roloff?
Madam Chair, I hope no. I hope not, because I can't answer it.
Okay. So, but the bills, if there's any bills relating to that, they'll come to this committee. Okay. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Committee. My name is Mike Salzwittle. I am an Executive Budget Officer with Minnesota Management and Budget as well. I also brought a picture showing my love of the outdoors, and it's a nice view from my parents' dock up on a lake near Perm, Minnesota. I'm not anticipating that they will need any clean water funding. We can still see down about 20 feet there.
All right.
I would like to discuss the Minnesota Zoo right now. The Minnesota Zoo had operating expenditures in fiscal year 2009 of around $23 million from all funding sources, which include money from the General Fund, the Natural Resources Fund, the visitors' fees, as well as private contributions. Their fiscal year 2009 General Fund appropriation was $7.1 million, or approximately 31% of their total budget. The main drivers of expenditures for the zoo for fiscal year 2009 are compensation costs of around $14 million, which fund their approximate 200 FTEs. General operating expenses are the second main driver of those expenses, which is over $6.5 million estimated for each year of the upcoming biennium. The zoo's fiscal year 2010 and 2011 general fund base budget is forecasted at $7.19 million, which is the same as their current fiscal year 2009 level. The governor's recommendation reflects the plan that was requested by and submitted to Minnesota Management and Budget. This recommendation annually reduces the base fiscal 10 and 11 general fund amount by $832,000, representing a 10% general fund base reduction or a 3.8% reduction of the total estimated expenditures for each year. The recommendation also includes an estimated $357,000 in new revenues from the zoo that they are anticipating raising by revising their fee structure in any or all of the categories to offset a portion of this general fund reduction. Do you have any questions regarding the zoo?
Hearing none.
Madam Chair, I realize that I have totally shirked my responsibilities. I did not bring a picture, but I have a thumb drive in my pocket that has a picture of my new grandchild. Maybe I'll share that with the committee.
The new grandchild outside? Embracing the Minnesota outdoors?
I'll make sure he is by the time I get back to the city.
All right. You can always draw a picture, you know. The winner of the pictures was a hand-drawn picture hanging outside my office in a frame.
Madam Chairman, the next one on the list is public broadcasting. Public broadcasting is not a state agency, but they get an appropriation from the state. It has been handled as a rider in the Department of Administration's budget. Certainly the last 2 years, I believe before that. The total amount is $1.955 million each year, and the governor recommended the same base budget appropriation for public broadcasting in 10 and 11 that they had in 2009. So there was no change in that recommendation.
But they were on a lot of in 2009, right?
I believe there was a small part of one of
the
that was on a lot. I believe that's correct.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the next item on our list is the Science Museum of Minnesota. The Science Museum of Minnesota, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, received support from the state in form of a general fund appropriation. Their current FY 2009 appropriation of $1.25 million represents approximately 4.5% of their total unrestricted fiscal year 2009 budget. The Science Museum of Minnesota receives revenues from the state general fund as well as other sources, including private contributions and admissions, memberships, and sponsorship receipts. All of these unrestricted revenues contribute largely to the day-to-day operations of the museum. The governor's recommendation for the museum for fiscal year 10 and 11 includes a reduction of that $1.25 million by $63,000 each year, which represents a 5% general fund base reduction or less than 1% reduction from their overall unrestricted FY 2009 budget. Do you have any questions on the science museum?
No, we'll save those for when the science museum comes before us.
Madam Chair, the next two on the list are a couple of grant programs, a couple of appropriations that are handled through the education bill.
One of them that's of interest to your committee is the amount of funding for public libraries and also the Children's Museum, both in St. Paul and in Duluth. There have been no changes to those recommendations in the governor's budget. I'm sorry, I didn't remember to bring with me what the appropriations are to public libraries, but for the museums, the St. Paul Children's Museum gets $260,000 a year, and the Duluth Children's Museum gets $50,000 a year, and the governor has recommended no change in those.
Mr. Roloff, the handout says that the recommendation is $1.717 million less than the base funding. Or am I wrong?
Is that for the library?
Pardon me?
Is that for the library?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I'll have to check on that and get back to you. I was not as prepared for that as I should have been. Or I will have the executive budget officer for our education unit, and I'll have them get in contact with Mr. Soderbergh.
But they're going to come before us, too.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I do note that he's assuming that will be a shift, just like the K-12 mm-hmm. school aid.
Thank you. A shift. Thank you.
And then the last agency on the list is the Public Facilities Authority. They get a very small general fund appropriation, and the governor's recommendation continues that. I believe it's $100,000 a year for their small community wastewater treatment program. Is that correct, sir?
Grant.
But then the big change in the PFA budget is this sort of makes the transition to the governor's recommendation on the amendment, the constitutional amendment, and the recommendations that he made in both the clean water area and the parks and trails. And Mr. Zolpley will walk us through that part first.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if we could talk a little bit about the constitutional funding that was included in the governor's budget recommendation. The governor's recommendation include funding proposals for the Parks and Trails Fund as well as the Clean Water Fund that were put into the Minnesota State Constitution by the voters of Minnesota last November. The recommendation planning for both funds was brought together through a collaborative effort by those agencies whose missions embrace the activities that are outlined by the new language in our Constitution. In regards to the Parks and Trails Fund first, the Parks and Trails Fund proposal, the governor has recommended a total of $17.2 million in fiscal year 2010 and $35.9 million in fiscal year 2011. The total is broken out between the Department of Natural Resources and the Metropolitan Council as follows. 38% of that total is appropriated to the DNR for renewal, restoration, and rehabilitation of state parks and trails. 24% was appropriated to the DNR for Parks and Trails grants for regional parks and trails system. 38% is appropriated to the Metropolitan Council for the support of metro area parks and trails. And those totals come to $10.6 million in fiscal year 10 for DNR, and $22.2 million in fiscal year 11 for DNR, and $6.5 in fiscal year 10, and $13.6 million for Metropolitan Council. The Clean Water Fund proposals...
Representative Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. Folkman. On the trails funding, is there any programmatic changes that you're recommending? My understanding is some of the regional trails funds is actually designated in statutes for Greater Minnesota, so that
the DNR grant program, Madam Chair, Committee, the DNR actually does have an existing grant program that these funds will be addition to. So.
And my understanding is that it's for Greater Minnesota Regional Trails, is that correct? And he's not making a recommendation to change that?
Madam Chair and Representative Walker, what he's tried, his recommendation has tried to reach the full gamut of parks and trails, with some of it being specifically for state parks and trails, some of it being for metro parks and trails, and then some of it being a grant program for regional parks and trails. And I believe it would just be an addition to the what DNR has been doing in the parks and trails area at local level. There was no reduction in parks and trails in the DNR.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Rolos, I think the concern that Representative Loeffler is addressing, and I'm not sure that you've answered the question, we understand that in the statute that the money for DNR parks and trails grants is restricted to parks and trails in Greater Minnesota, which would suggest that the governor's proposal has 38% going to metropolitan parks and 62% going to Greater Minnesota parks and parks and trails. Is that how you understand the recommendations of the governor?
The roll-off.
Perhaps there's somebody here from DNR who can help out, but it's my understanding that that those pots of money would be reserved for the out-state or regional trails more. I don't know.
Representative Hodge.
Thank you very much. I think more work has to be done on this issue. I think there has been a long time feeling in Greater Minnesota that there is a metro money and our money, meaning that there's really only kind of a one pot. I get used to it at my house, you know, where my wife has her money and then we have our money. And I think that pretty much is happening. We'll call this Larry's wife Park Bill there. But I think there is a problem on clarity on Greater Minnesota, and especially in park areas where there's no state parks, because the money has a tendency to get spread to metro areas and then state parks, and there is big sections of areas where there's Greater Minnesota and regional parks that they would like to have a specified set of money, and they're flexible. I think I was meeting with people in my office today representing an ad hoc group of 22 counties without them soliciting too much. So I think we have to be pretty careful as we move forward to make sure what we're doing is fair.
Representative Virginia.
Thank you. I see a lively discussion coming.
Many lively discussions, I think.
But I'm going to go back to a previous question that Representative Morgan asked and give you another example of the substitution issue. The governor, in his general budget, reduced the base funding to Metro Parks. And so if you reduce the base funding to Metro Parks, then how can we add this new money to Metro Parks, because it will appear to be that we are substituting the new money for traditional funding? I don't see how we get around it.
Mr. Roloff.
Madam Chair, Representative Wikini, if I did want to get back to Representative Morgan's question on brings up the whole supplementation issue. And if I remember the budget correctly, and Metro Parks
isn't part of my assignment. I believe there was a small cut to that, and that may have to be adjusted or something. But in the supplantation issue is a very complicated issue, and the governor has made some public statements on it. There are a number of people who would make the case that because the constitutional language says that this money has to be in addition to and not in place of, that all of a sudden that locks all of the state agency budgets within those areas from ever taking any kind of a general fund or other type of funding reduction. The governor has, and that case has been made, and we expect that that case will continue to be made, and we don't know, it may end up in court, who knows. But the governor has stated publicly that he doesn't agree with that the constitutional language and the vote was so limited that you couldn't really deal with the agency's budgets, and that he made his decision kind of based on whether or not there was any constitutional money available to replace the cut or not. And that's kind of his position on the public record. Again, like I said, supplementation is very difficult. I actually wrestled with it with the federal government about 20 years ago with a state program we were working on. But you can make the case that certainly the constitutional amendment says that this amount of money has to go to parks and trails. But in theory, because you get to make that decision and you need to develop an appropriation language and enact it, in theory it's possible that you could set priorities that say all of this money will now go to state parks, or all of this money will now go to local parks. And it's even conceivable that you could say, well, we're going to cut the amount of money that goes to state parks, put that into local parks, and all of the new constitutional money into local parks. And then in some people's opinion, that will have met the constitutional language that this money be used in addition to and not in place of. So it's very difficult. I think you're going to find, as the governor did, a number of challenges as you start having these discussions about this new source of money and some of the supplementation or replacement issues that are involved with it. That I sort of open it to questions.
Representative Virginia, hold on.
Yes, thank you. Well, it's not so helpful for you to say, well, we will have to wrestle with it. You all made some recommendations. And I would look at the Bowser one, where you cut the budget 43% over this current biennium, and did... Now, some of that was one-time money, but you cut them 10% and then put maybe $20 or $30 million of this clean water money into Bowser. Help me understand how you can justify that.
Mr. Rolla.
Madam Chair and Representative Wagenius, on the clean water side, there were Bowser... the Bowser recommendation would be, the governor chose to make recommendations in the clean water area because clean water was probably the clearest case of an area that didn't have a base appropriation. The money that had been appropriated in last biennium was an FY08 appropriation. Some of that money carried into FY09, but by law, the 10 and 11 base is set up by the FY09 appropriation. And so he thought the case was pretty clear in these areas that this was
new money, that it was needed, that it was not replacing existing money. He did ask those same agencies to make some cuts in their budgets, and they were instructed to make cuts in their operational areas and try to stay away from those kinds of things that would be interpreted as supplementation.
Representative,
this final follow-up. I think what you are arguing is that Bowser never had any responsibility for clean water, so this could be new money for Bowser. That's an interesting argument, but then I would ask you, well, why do you think they're competent then, if they've never done anything in clean water, to spend tens of millions of dollars in cleaning up our water?
Roll off.
Madam Chair and Representative Wagenius, I don't think I was trying to make the case that Bowser couldn't do clean water activities or had no responsibilities previously in clean water activities. What I'm trying to say is that by law, none of these appropriations were made in 2009, and therefore money going into these appropriations and into these areas would be in addition to, not replacing. Because there were no FY9 appropriations in here, there was no base projected forward, and there were no cuts to base that was being replaced. It may be a technical budgeteer kind of argument or something like that.
There was a cut to base. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's an interesting discussion. I think we've built kind of a work in progress on how we're going to do this, and I look forward to when we are making some firm guidelines and recommendations and see how they stack up with what the governor is suggesting. But going back to the discussion earlier that Representative Haas and others were having regarding the metro parks in Greater Minnesota and the 24% or 38% allocations and such, I just want to make sure that I understand clearly. Of course, Greater Minnesota, I'm sure, wishes to be treated fairly in this, and Representative Haas is talking about kind of the yours, mine, and ours pots of money out there, and I just want to know, in your opinion, will the metro area have two different shots at this money as opposed to Greater Minnesota one?
Mr. Roloff.
Madam Chair and Representative Erdahl, I'm not certain. I think you're going to have to ask DNR what their view of that, the grant program that handles that third pot of money is. We were under the impression that that would be regional park and that that would be mostly outside of the Twin Cities area. I also know that in some of those existing appropriations, there are some pretty specific directions about which trails get which money. I would assume there would be the same ability to do that kind of stuff for the legislature. But whether the specific percentages that have been recommended, I would imagine they will be wrestled and the specific language into what it can be and can't be used for will be the subject of a lot of discussion. But like I said, the governor's proposal was try to make sure that all of the areas of the state were served with the parks and trails fund.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Roloff. So you're saying that we have to depend on our good friends of the DNR to make sure that Greater Minnesota is being treated fairly?
Representative Kahn.
Well, Madam Chairman, is I guess the only person sitting around this table who was here when the Metropolitan Regional Parks were established and the funding
was established for them, I would like to point out that at the time it was considered that the metropolitan regional parks were essentially the moral equivalent to state parks in the state, because there were very few state parks, particularly compared to population in the metropolitan area. So I think the point that Representative Hawes makes is really correct, that areas where there are no state parks ought to be treated in some special sense only. But for many, many years, I know that the budget for state parks and metro regional parks was kept roughly equivalent, and I assume that kind of into trails too, following that concept that they were the, you know, that we weren't going to be establishing state parks in the metropolitan area. There wasn't land available, and these were very much like state parks for those purposes. They were not like the kind of city parks, or even though some of them were incorporated, some city parks were incorporated into them, but they had the kind of statewide significance that state parks had. So I think that's the kind of thing that you want to look at. And so there were two aspects. They had the kind of outside visitorship, not just for the neighborhood, that state parks had, and they also existed in the area where there weren't state parks. So I think you want to make that same kind of analysis for the support of the non-metro regional parks.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you once again, Madam Chair. I have a question and I guess a statement. I noticed that there is no recommendation for appropriation from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Maybe you were about to get to that, but I guess I'll just ask the question. Is there a reason the governor has not made any recommendations in that area?
Mr. Roloff.
Madam Chairman, I guess all I can say is that the governor chose to make recommendations in the two areas. Clean water, because it had a history of a working group who could come together and create a recommendation that addressed the needs of clean water. And so we thought that they could get a recommendation there, and that, again, the supplantation issues were less onerous in that clean water area. So he decided to make a recommendation in the clean water area in the parks and trails area. He chose not to make one in the outdoor heritage area because he knows that the Lessard Council has been set up by the legislature to develop the recommendations for that specific pot of money, and he was willing to let that process work itself out. And last but not least was the arts and cultural heritage part of the amendment. And it has some very, very, very complicated issues associated with it, along the lines of supplantation and setting priorities and even defining what is arts or cultural heritage and who might be eligible for that, because I have a feeling that you are going to be hearing from a number of organizations and state agencies who will have very broad definitions of what that money might be able to do and what it might be used for. And we just weren't in a position in this budget process to try to address that.
Madam Chair, I appreciate admission that this is a very tricky problem that we're facing, and the supplanting and the supplementing. I'm not sure, but I think I may have heard, I may have to go back and check the tape, but I think I may have heard in your answer to Representative Wagenius a position on what supplanting and supplementing may mean, at least in terms of the clean water, some of the portions of the clean water fund. I hope that MMB or the governor's office or whomever will be working with us actively as we work to put a bill here together, get it to the floor, get it to conference committee, and get it to the governor's desk so that we can avoid last-minute surprises as to what one person or another may think is supplementing and supplanting. We want to get these things settled as early as possible as we move forward. So I hope we'll be hearing more from your office and from the governor's office on this issue as we move along. Thank you.
Mr. Charles Little, at the very beginning of this section, you said that there had been a meeting, cooperative meeting of agencies making recommendations to the governor for these recommendations?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Could you tell us more about that? I don't know if you used the word cooperative. You used another word, I think, that started with C. Could you tell us some more about that process?
Madam Chair, committee, the word was collaborative.
Collaborative, that's it.
And what I was referencing...
And what were the agencies that were collaborating?
Madam Chair, committee, the agencies that were collaborating, I was mainly referring to the clean water piece, which I certainly we can go through now if you'd like. And those agencies apparently have a history of getting together and working through things to see how they can approach a situation together instead of as a separate agencies of government. The agencies I'm referring to are the Department of Agriculture, the Public Facilities Authority, Minnesota Department of Health, the Department of Natural Resources, Pollution Control, Board of Water and Soil Resources, and the Metropolitan Council. And we can quick go through where the governor's recommendations are for each of these agencies in regards to the clean water.
Madam Chair, just one addition. I think with the exception of the Met Council, I think those are the agencies that constitute what is generally known as the governor's clean water cabinet. And that's the collaborative effort he's talking about.
And they meet on a regular basis?
That I cannot tell you how regular it is.
Clean water cabinet?
Right.
And that
they were
the morning?
They
afternoon?
Were
a coffee or lunch? Or?
Madam Chair, they were asked by the governor specifically. I think mostly we work through the Pollution Control Agency to bring those people together again and to see if they could come up with some kind of overall recommendation for the use of this clean water money, much as they did for the recommendations that were made in FY08, the one-time money. And they made a number of recommendations on the clean water program. The problem has always been ongoing funding.
Do they have any? Are the meetings announced of the cabinet?
I do not know that. I will try to find out.
Yeah. We'd really like to know some of these. Maybe sometime we'd like to come.
Bring a picture.
Bring a picture. Right. Okay. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I really am quite certain every day more so that we have our hands full here. I was kind of digging out these maps of who voted for and who voted against. And, you know, you look at that, I'm not sure what I learned from that. And then
56% of the people.
I get that number. There's a lot of red and there's a lot of, you know, green. I was looking, you know, I'm trying to get my arms around your numbers, and, you know, the governor's recommendation says $53 million, right, for package for the parks and trails, and these funds will be used at the state and local level. So I'm curious, here's my question with that, is how does it, what am I going to see in North St. Paul on a local level with any of these dollars in this budget for trails?
Madam Chairman, Representative Lilly, I don't know.
I think we're
a month.
That question's a month premature.
Okay. Well, okay. I'll maybe since we have the assistant commissioner, I know he didn't probably want to come up, but I'm trying to get my arms around Okay. Maybe you can.
For more detail, we want to hear the rest of the clean water presentation, and then and hear their thing, and then I'm going to ask for brief clarifications from any agencies that are here.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And we can have little questions then. And then at the end there, I know there's a group from Central Minnesota that's here to talk a little more about parks.
Thank you,
and
Madam
I
Chair.
Said there'd be 5 or 7 minutes for them. So, does that help?
Yes.
Does
Thank
that
you very much.
In? And then you can
I trust your
the
leadership.
Then. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I think we're all wrestling, as you have been since for the last few months. Probably had more time to do it in meetings over lunch to get more in your offices than we have with some of these issues. And I'm hoping that we will take the best ideas and the best insights of state agencies and local agencies and nonprofits and individual citizens and all put it together. And I'm hoping it doesn't become a state agencies versus others or this or that. But, you know, at the end, there's going to be some real competition. The key question of accountability to me, to the voters, is, you know, what did you do with those funds? And what was the purpose that the voters thought they were for? What do they think the promise was that was made in that language? And while we've had, you know, kind of danced around it a little bit, I bet you've had some really smart minds helping you think that through, maybe even some attorneys. And I'm wondering if you might be willing to provide to us some of those documents where they shared with you various ways that you can interpret various words and how you might interpret how this went, because you obviously came to a conclusion that the governor was comfortable with and you as his representatives have to present. But you know, it would be helpful to me in thinking this through to see some of that and to help me think it through in terms of what those key words and that constitutional amendment mean and how they can be interpreted in different ways.
Mr. Rola?
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler, I can tell you that the discussions about supplementation and uses of this net money and how broad could things be defined were the subject of many discussions. We don't, to my knowledge, have any kind of legal opinion about a legal definition of supplementation or how you would defend a case that the advocacy agency brought forward its own version of what supplementation is, what was the meaning of that constitutional amendment. And so I don't think there's going to be a lot to share with you. The governor's public statement, I think he made at the time of his budget release in terms of how he had heard that some entities were making the case that you could not cut a budget based on this, and he just fundamentally disagreed with that. And he approached his budget decision different. So I do not think that there's a lot of written documentation, but I'll see what we can do.
And check with that collaborative clean water cabinet.
So, Madam Chairman, just my background before I got into the legislature was as a scientist with a big background in mathematics, and it seemed one of the things that I did notice when looking at this amendment was that it repeated language that was in the statutory language that accompanied the Environmental Trust Fund Amendment, which many of us will talk about how it was violated. And one of the things we noticed was that there was a decision to put it into the constitutional language rather than rely on statutory language. So that clearly meant that someone was going to take it more seriously. I started thinking about it a little myself, and I decided, how would you decide, particularly at a point when you're cutting budgets,
yeah,
how would you decide the difference between supplementing and supplanting. One thing that seemed clear to me is that if you're cutting budgets, you can say everything, in fact, I think the senators have said this, everything gets a certain percentage cut, and you might work around this. So let's look at something like the governor's office and the legislative offices who are talking about a 5% cut. So then I thought, okay, you don't want to rigidly just cut everything the same amount that you're going to look. So just in my own mind, I thought if you went up to, say, 10% on some of the things that are supported by this amendment, you know, that could fit into the supplement but not the plan. I think we all have to reject the idea that any cut, when everything is being cut, is an example. But I think one can just mathematically compare it with the average cuts and, you know, give a certain amount of leeway. In my own mind, I gave it a factor of 2 leeway and go on from there. But I think when we see these different, you know, this dramatic cut to the historical society, the elimination of the humanities appropriation, looks like it's getting to the elimination of the arts board. I think we're clearly getting beyond the discussion of what rational differences between cuts to agencies. And I know that some of us had prepared a lawsuit for the Environmental Trust Fund. Unfortunately, for various reasons, it wasn't followed through at that time. And, you know, I think that even though that statutory language still exists, the problem is the legislature can't, once it's been complicit in doing it over multiple years, it's kind of silly to think you could sue the executive branch just because they suggested it. I will tell in the legislative history, there is a Rukavina Khan lawsuit where we successfully sued the governor, then Governor Carlson, for the violation of a constitutional provision. So it can be done. And the decision was made by a Republican judge who said very, very nasty things about both myself and my co-plaintiff, and clearly didn't want to make the decision that he made, but felt there was no choice. So you can, you know, the legislature should be prepared to move in if we think that this constitution is being violated.
And that's why the framework that we developed is so very, very important, as well as the language that we developed is so very, very important. Representative Wagenius?
Just a real quick follow-up on Representative Lawford's question. As you're bringing forth things to us that helped you make decisions that you did, in the clean water, there were 4 things that the folks, citizens of Minnesotans, voted for. There was drinking water source protection, cleanup, groundwater protection, and prevention. And as I look at all the recommendations, I see very little for groundwater and virtually nothing for prevention. So if you could help us understand why, when the citizens voted for that as, I think, one of the 4 legs of the stool, why the Clean Water Collaborative Council or whatever decided not to allocate any money for prevention.
Madam Chair, as Representative Genius, we will look into that. Are you speaking specifically about prevention as it relates to groundwater, or?
Well, I think we just need to go back and look at the language of the Constitution when folks voted for it. There is clearly the word protection is in there.
Yeah.
So I think that's the language. I don't have the language in front of me to read you.
One thing I would say is that I certainly think a number of the programs that PFA operates, they're clearly prevention. pollution prevention or trying to keep the waters cleaner and those types of things. So I'm not exactly certain that we would agree that all four of those haven't been addressed, but I'll try to take a closer look.
Mr. Falwell, will you please continue?
Madam Chair, committee, I'll just do a quick rundown on what dollars were appropriated to each of these agencies in the governor's recommendation. And I should have mentioned this before with the parks section as well. You'll notice that the fiscal year 2010 is roughly half of what the estimated receipts are projected to be. This was done intentionally because not only do receipts not flow into the respective until approximately August 15th, but this was done to avoid volatility risk in the receipt of the money and done for cash flow concerns. So that was an intentional a way of planning for us. So starting out with the Department of Agriculture, they were appropriated in the governor's recommendation $3 million in 2010 and $5.8 million in 2011. Public Facilities Authority was appropriated $8.1 in 2010 and $17.25 in 2011. The Department of Health recommended appropriation of $1.2 in 10 and $2.5 in 11. Department of Natural Resources Clean Water Funds is recommended at $2.4 in 2010 and $4.9 in 2011. Pollution Control is recommended appropriation level of $12.9 in 2010 and $24.3 in 2011. The Board of Water and Soil Resources is recommended level of appropriation is $11.45 in 2010 and $23.1 million in 2011. The Met Council has also received an appropriation under the governor's recommendation of $188,000 in 2010 and $750,000 in 2011. And I'd gladly answer any questions regarding those levels of funding.
Okay, but these recommendations that you just read, that this is money that were not appropriate, there were no appropriations for these things in 2009. Is that what I understand?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
And so, therefore, you're saying that they could be appropriated from the new revenue that's coming in from the constitutional amendment for 2010.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Since we're looking at the full constitutional amendment, and all I have here is a list of these items, and I don't sit, for example, on the Ag Committee. So I don't know if we're currently in the Department of Agriculture doing agricultural best practices loans or drinking water protection. I tend to know something about the Department of Health, and I know they have been working on drinking water in the past. It would be useful for me if we could get from you for each of these items what that agency has been doing in the past on that topic area and what you are recommending that they do in the future on that particular item for each of these things, so that I could put it in context, because none of us can sit on all those budget divisions, but we do need to know for our work what is going to be accomplished by this that is different than what was done in the past. What is the agency currently doing in that area? Has ever historically done in that area? You know, do they have the expertise? Why would they be the right group to do it?
Madam Chair, Committee, we certainly can talk with these agencies and see if we can come up with a sort of answer.
That would be helpful to all of us, yes. Anything else?
No,
thank you so much.
Thank you.
We appreciate your input a lot. Is there anyone from any agency that wants to make any clarifying remarks? Just come before us for a very quick, short time. But as much as you need. Lots of questions were brought out, and so it would be good to hear it tonight rather than have us chew over the answers. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Member, to the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. Just quickly on the clarification on the governor's recommendations for the parks and trails dollars. We have been working with all entities, Greater Minnesota Parks, Metro Parks, ourselves, and discussing the needs, and the proposal before you, the 38-38-24 split, is kind of where those discussions ended. For the most part, it's a 24% question that did come up. We are working with finance on language that will be needed to be changed in that section of law to make those that grant program eligible statewide. Right now, it's for outstate regional systems. The proposal that the governor's budget will contain is dealing with that program being for statewide competition, basically. Something we can discuss are what those parameters are, how people qualify, and things like that. But we do recognize the need to go in and look at that statute and change it a little bit.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Meyer, I was just wondering, as far as that 24% that would be for grants, if it's opened up statewide, has there been a track record in the past of such grant programs where the money typically goes, if it's more oriented towards metro or rural areas? It just seems to me that when you have statewide grant programs, it tends to be those areas that are more well organized that would probably have a greater chance of getting those grants. And I know in the rural areas we have more difficulties in that area and the organization necessary to develop applications for these grants and secure those grants. So is there any track record of grant programs of that nature statewide, and whether that goes disproportionately to the metro areas as opposed to the rural?
Madam Chair, members, the current grant program, you may be more familiar with, is a local initiative grant program, and I can provide you a detailed list of the past funding history of those programs, and that has currently gone primarily with what we consider outstate or outside of the Seven County metropolitan area. But these are discussions that we need to have with the legislature and you folks have to make a decision on how that should actually work and set those priorities. So I can provide you a detailed list of the history of the local initiative grants program, where that has gone for the past but two biennials, maybe. Would that be appropriate? Okay.
Good. That would be good. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to do my hats off to Mr. Myers for coming forward and facing us and the follow-up. A lot of courage. You know, I'm just going to say quickly, you know, that, you know, we've all probably been back to our districts and had town meetings, and we all know this deficit's coming and what's going on there, and, you know, I'm pretty moderate, so I usually say, well, the governor's got the tough job. He had to throw the first thing out, and then we're going to respond to it. And I think the key that I keep hearing from folks back home is just be fair, you know, and I hope, you know, there's some areas when I look at the budget, you know, where it maybe doesn't meet the fairness kind of thing, and I think we'll hopefully get there, and, you know, where there's total elimination in certain areas, and, you know, maybe that just doesn't seem like it'll work, but, you know, maybe it will at the end, I don't know, but, and then I'm glad to hear about the parks and the trails, because that, you know, there's a lot of folks in the cities that are paying for stuff, and we don't always get trails either unless the cities build them or stuff. And it's neat to, one of the neat things about being here is you can hear the different perspectives and whether they have state parks, and of course we go out and use them, and people that don't have state parks like St. Cloud maybe, or so it's a learning experience for us too. But please, as you go forward, I hope fairness is kind of the word, I think, for the end for all of us, I hope.
I would like to, you know, and I know it's way down on the list of probably things to be concerned about, but in that whole park situation, another factor of the metro area and greater Minnesota area is the rules are different. And one of the rules that varies is that inside the metro area, monies are being allowed to be used for maintenance and general maintenance, not just large maintenance projects, but general maintenance projects, which are normally provided by, in the outstate, would be provided by the locality or the county. And so there is a distinct difference here that's happening. And many of us that have watched it happen over the years consider it not to be a fair, at least consider it to be a lot different set of rules. So that's a comment.
Thank you. Thank you very
much,
Minister. Please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rebecca Flood. I'm Assistant Commissioner for Water Policy at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and appreciate your hearing today. I wanted to make a couple of clarifications. One, the Clean Water Cabinet, it's my understanding that that is an entity called together by the governor. It's my understanding they have not met for a year or more regarding water issues. The state agency staff, the assistant commissioners, is the group that came together to meet and discuss our various involvement in all aspects of water, whether that's monitoring or testing, that sort of thing, to make sure that we fully understood what each one of our departments were doing, and then making sure that there's no overlap, that we're efficient and effective, and making a recommendation then based on that and our individual areas of expertise and focus in making a recommendation to MMB in terms of what types of work that we will be doing. So I just wanted to give that clarification
for the
committee.
For the collaborative clean water cabinet. Or what, now you said the agency directors? Not the commissioners, but
assistant commissioners and assistant directors of Bowser.
Assistant commissioners and assistant directors. And how many times did the assistants collaborate?
Madam Chair, I believe we met probably 4 or 5 times to discuss.
Between November 6th and when you had to submit the budget?
Madam Chair, that's approximately correct. I'm not exactly sure the first date in which we met.
Yes. But it was after the vote.
Yes, ma'am.
Where'd you meet?
At the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And we would certainly be happy as agencies to come back and make a presentation to you about what's in the governor's proposal.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank
we
you.
Appreciate that, Ms. Clark. Any other agencies? Any agency people that want to direct remarks to anything particular that was questioned or said? Then Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails has a couple people here, I understand. Six. Mr. Wolken, they asked in several different emails and then through Representative Hogs, and so I said, oh, no sense in making them drive again, and they came all this way, and it's stormy in central Minnesota maybe, and so thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The roads were a lot nicer than we expected them to be in making our fair journey here. My name is Chuck Wolken. I'm the Stearns County Park Director, and with me are Mark Matthijs, Wright County Park Administrator, Nerd Mark, Chisago County Park Director, and Rick Anderson of Lyon County. We represent Greater Minnesota Regional Park and Trail Providers. That's a loosely formed coalition of Greater Minnesota entities. For our Greater Minnesota Park and Trail Providers, we're the local units of government outside the metropolitan area that provide regional parks that are natural resource-based outdoor recreation facilities. These facilities provide day-use access to nature and urbanizing areas. Regional parks provide a different niche than state parks, which are major investments in large natural landscapes unique within Minnesota. Regional parks are close-to-home nature opportunities. According to a report done for the LCMR in 2005 by the Association of Minnesota Counties, there are 27 different cities and 38 different counties that provide regional parks or trails in greater Minnesota. The 2005 inventory indicates at least 62 of these regional parks are at least 200 acres or larger in size. There's a desperate need for park and trail funding in greater Minnesota. As the governor's 2008 budget proposal indicated, grant requests in 2008 were for $37 million with only $850,000 available. Stearns County alone has $20 million of regional park and trail projects identified within its comprehensive plan. Wright County is poised to acquire a 1,256-acre nature park site near Monticello. Using the same acreage standard as the Metropolitan Council of 25 acres of regional parks and trails per 1,000 population, the 2007 LCCMR report by George Orning indicates the need for an additional 26,000 acres of regional parks and trails in greater Minnesota's emerging urban areas. When greater Minnesota regional park and trail providers receive state grants, they also sign a contract which obligates the local unit of government to the maintenance and operations of the facility for the lifetime of the facility. We would like the legislature to recognize the role that greater Minnesota fills in acquiring, developing, and maintaining regional parks and trails and set aside 33% from the Park and Trail Fund for each of the three entities, Greater Minnesota Regional Parks, State Parks, and Metro Parks. Greater Minnesota would use its share for capital acquisition, development, and restoration of regional parks and trails in Greater Minnesota. 22 Greater Minnesota counties and 4 cities have lent their support to this request, as is included in the position statement, which I believe was handed out by staff. We're not professional lobbyists, we're just professional park people. We'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to our guests. I think everyone in Minnesota loves parks, and a few places are lucky enough to get trails. I have a question, though. Of the list of counties that we have here, are they all cities or counties that don't have a state park or state forest within their borders? Or I'm just trying to understand what part of greater Minnesota is represented here versus, because you had kind of the third, a third, and a third. And I'm sorry, for some of us from the metro area, we tend to think of the state park as playing that same role for some people in some areas. And so I'm just trying to get a better understanding of how this coalesces and if there's some common denominator.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Committee, I'm sure there are state parks within some of these counties or cities that are referenced here, but our point is in regional parks that they really provide a different niche. We know that the regional parks in the Metro Council are extremely important, and they provide close-to-home nature opportunities. And that's kind of the comparison that we make in greater Minnesota, is that we're providing close-to-home nature, outdoor recreation opportunities. And the state parks really kind of go a step above that and provide for funding and preservation of totally unique landscapes that should be preserved for all Minnesotans. And they're of a scale and a size that are beyond regional parks. So there are cities, there are counties that have state parks that are on this list. But they feel that they're fulfilling a niche in providing regional parks throughout greater Minnesota.
Representative Law, and just so that I have a good understanding of regional park, in my area, I've always understood that the definition of a regional park was it was extensively used by people who live outside of that area. Is that similar to yours, that if you had a regional park in County A, it would be a regional park versus a county park because it's used heavily by people from the 5 surrounding regions?
Madam Chair, committee members, we're familiar with that measurement, and it's a very important measurement.
I can only use as an example Quarry Park and Nature Preserve, which is a 643-acre regional park. Now it's in the city of Way Park, and when it was established, it was in a township. But 50% of the visitors to that park are not from Stearns County. We see lots of representation from White Bear Lake, Maple Grove, St. Paul. So it's also serving the metro area. Because of its uniqueness, it does attract. But for our experience, that, you know, it does draw people from beyond the boundaries.
Madam Chair, Councilman Laird Mark with Chisago County. I'd like to add to that comment. In Chisago County, we don't have any state trails as a state trail system. A study by the LCMR, the DNR, and the National Park Service indicated trails were one of the top priorities for citizens in our region. So Chisago County ended up building a 16-mile trail, and we did receive some funding from LCMR and the federal IT program, but it's not a state trail. It's not operated by the state. So that's an example of something that serves the region but yet has been built by the county. We're also working on an additional trail that runs east and west in Chisago County between Wyoming and Taylor's Falls. This would also be a county-built trail and county-maintained and operated, so we would be able to access some of these funding sources for that. Also regarding the question of whether or not our county parks serve the region, we've done surveys at our Fish Lake Park, which is our most popular swimming and picnicking park, and we found on weekends that 7 out of the 10 visitors are from out of our county. During the week, it's about a 50-50 mix. So we do have regional parks in our county, and they are classified as regional parks.
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, my name is Mark Matthias. I'm the Wright County Parks Administrator. Wright County is just on the other side of Hennepin County. And we do have a state park. It's called Lake Moriah. We also have regional parks in our county. In our campgrounds, 6 out of 10 users are from other counties, Meeker, McLeod, Hennepin, Ramsey, etc. Our nature center hosts a variety of naturalist programs. We attract people from Meeker, Stern, Sherburne, as well as Tarver County and Hennepin County into our nature center. So we are a regional attraction. As we talk about state parks, though, I want to everybody to remember that state parks serve all of Minnesota. There are state parks within the Seven County metro area, as well as there are state parks outside the Seven County metro area. You have Fort Snelling, you have Afton, you have Minnesota Valley Recreation Trails. So the money for the state parks and trails account will be used throughout the state as well. So I just want to make sure that, you know, just because we have state parks, there are state parks also here in the metro area.
Madam Chair, my name is Rick Anderson from Lyon County, which is the southwest part of the state. We are fortunate to have 2 state parks, one within Lyon County and one right south in Murray County. But our usage is starting to find that we are starting to draw from the South Dakota area, Iowa area, and as far east as the Mankato area for some of the uniqueness that we have with our horse riding trails that we provide in the park. Not every state park does that. We also open up the park for limited archery hunting season for the bow hunters, and we're drawing of the permits that we gave out this year, 40% of them came from the metro area. Our turkey hunting season that we do in the spring, we worked with MPIT to do that. Half of the permits that are given in Lyon County are to people that are outside of Lyon County. So we also feel that we're being able to provide services that can't be done with the state parks and bringing in people from all over the area. So.
Thank you. You gave us something to think about as we proceed in our discussions on parks and trails, which I think everyone has great interest in. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your attention.
That completes our agenda. We do have a reading assignment for next Monday in particular. Starting on Wednesday, we will need it. And that means the reading assignments for everybody in the room, or everybody that's going to be in the room, setting priorities. This meeting is adjourned.